Hello and welcome to the 80th episode of Technically Speaking, where scientists and engineers come together to chat about common interests, share knowledge, and satisfy some curiosity. As well as being the 80th episode, this is the start of our fourth year in podcasting.
Woo!
Amazing. I'm Antonia, and in this milestone episode, I'm joined by Laura, Nick, and Ellie to talk about explosions, fire, and some explosive animals.
Always.
But we'll get to that. So, Laura, you wanted to talk about this. Why was that?
Basically, plutonium seems to be portrayed in a very strange way in films, from what I can tell. So normally, someone will say, be careful with that, it's plutonium. And I get why the script writers have said that, basically to essentially get across that it's plutonium they're working with rather than something else. But it always makes it sound like if that person drops it, it will suddenly explode. Like it's, I don't know, C4 or something. It's not really true and it just winds me up. So there you go, I want to have a bit of a rant.
If you drop C4, will it?
That's what films portray. I actually don't know, having never done anything with it. Maybe we'll find out.
Hopefully we will. Because we have Nick here, who is a forensic engineer, and you probably could tell us a little bit about fire and explosions.
Yes, a bit. So, my name's Nick. I am a forensic engineer. I investigate engineering failures and mostly a lot of fires. And as part of that, I investigate quite a few explosions, including gas and chemical explosions.
Wow. Going to be really interesting to see what we can learn from you. And Ellie, you're our resident zoologist, and surprisingly, animals fit into this category.
Well, this is what I want your help with later on, because I have some examples and they are literally called exploding animals. So when I get to it, you can tell me what you think and whether they're truly exploding or not. I think they are, but I'm always on the animal side.
As we've learned by now.
But it'll make a good discussion point about what is and isn't explosive and how do they get their name anyway. So to start off with, Laura brought up the point about portrayals in films, especially plutonium. But we've seen a lot of other types of explosions in movies. And sometimes you just think, how likely are they?
Yeah, so bearing that in mind, for example, if you drop a box of plutonium, it's not going to explode. It's more risk of radiation. There's a specific mechanism, of course, there that causes an explosion with plutonium, which is a bit out of my scope when it comes, frankly, to nuclear explosions. As far as I know, there's not been a nuclear explosion in the UK. You know, God willing, there isn't going to be one in the future. But when it comes to other explosions, such as gas explosions, a famous example being, of course, Hot Fuzz. If we all remember that, one of the murders in Hot Fuzz is committed by the village council, spoilers, opening all the hob rings on a hob in a mansion and then leaving and lighting a match or lighting a cigarette and eventually the entire mansion explodes. Of course, in reality, that won't happen at all. For a gas like methane, which comprises mostly of natural gas comprises mostly of, you need a specific mixture of gas and air to cause a combustion effect to result in an explosion. Usually with methane gas, you end up with something called a deflagration. So basically, from a hob, you need enough gas to be fed into the atmosphere with a low enough exchange rate so you get a high enough concentration of gas for an explosion to actually occur, if that makes sense.
It does. So realistically, if I left all my hobs on, if they were gas, the house wouldn't explode if someone was just smoking nearby?
No. In fact, if you left your hob on and your hob was made in the last if your hob was made in the last 20 years, beg your pardon, your gas would turn off about 20 seconds after you turned it on, due to a flame failure device inside your hob turns the gas off.
That's very reassuring.
It is.
I'm pretty sure I've used hobs that are older than that, though.
Yeah, so hobs and heaters, older than that, they can cause what we call a very small flash or tiny little explosion, like a whoomph effect, And then you may end up with like a bit of a flaming vent. But ultimately, for an explosion to occur, you need a large enough, as I said, a limit above what we call the LEL, lower explosive limit. And below the LUL, UEL, the upper explosive limit, the upper explosive limit, it's all methane. There's no oxygen. You can't have the combustion that causes the explosion. That's the problem. You do need that oxidization, that combustion for the explosion to actually happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So really, we're talking about the fire triangle.
We're always talking about the fire triangle. But
some people are a lot closer to fires than you.
I'm not. I'm never talking about the fire triangle. I didn't know there was a fire triangle.
Yeah, so with a fire triangle, basically for any fire, or on a basic version, sometimes we talk about a fire tetrahedron, but we don't talk about a fire tetrahedron.
oh my God, I don't think I'm ready for that.
Let's start with a triangle.
Just for listeners, 2D. For no reason at all on a video feed, I'm holding my hands in a triangle. For a fire to occur, you need three things. You need a heat, you need fuel, and you need oxygen. Now, usually for oxygen, you've got that in the air. For heat, that's usually where a spark or a hot surface comes in, and you need a fuel. And in the case of most explosions, particularly gas explosions, that fuel is going to be methane or some other explosive gas, or combustible gas, I should say. So for a fire, or in this case, an explosion to occur, for example, in hot fuzz, the fuel would be the natural gas, the heat would be from the cigarette, and the oxygen just from the oxygen in the general air. All combustion and all fire is a simple chemical reaction of oxidization, resulting in heat and light, and a luminous gas we all call flames.
Thank you very much. And now look at me learning things about explosions already.
So if that's how a fire starts, then an explosion is something else, right? And I'd think of it as you can get like really volatile substances that suddenly release a load of energy, kind of what plutonium does, and it explodes in a certain environment. So essentially it has this kind of build-up of pressure inside something that surrounds it that releases.
Yes, exactly. So typically an explosion involving gas tends to be a sudden expansion of that gas. So that can occur in a sort of a fire explosion sense. That's caused by the sudden heating of the air suddenly expanding due to the combustion of methane. In the case of I worry about treading towards a nuclear explosion because my nuclear physics is wobbly at best. But you can simulate an explosion if you overpressurize a oxygen canister, for example, or a canister of any gas, to the point where the pressure inside reaches the beyond the safe limit of that container can hold. And that if there is a weakness in the canister, that gas will then explosively vent, a sudden disruptive force. Blowing open the canister, and that will also cause air in the room that canister has ruptured in to also be pushed to the sides of that, as that the contents of the canister is also pushed out. We often find...
So that's not an explosion because it's not violent enough. Is there a definition of how violent it has to be?
That's a movie classic as well. They always do like a shot like old Die Hard, where they like pan dramatically across to the movie that oxygen canisters for no apparent reason in an office building.
So we're all start to steam and the top's flying off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But of course, if the top has flown off, we've already released the gas and it's fine.
Yeah. No. There's actually much.
That's just venting.
Well, precisely. For example, if you heat up a canister like that, or a canister catches fire, what tends to happen is the safety mechanism at the top breaks and it just vents and catches fire. You have a vent. I do this a lot. For the listeners, I'm waving my hands around to imitate flames flying out of the canister.
Yeah, so we've kind of established you don't have to have fire to have an explosion. An explosion is something different from a fire.
Yes, exactly. In fire investigation, it's often the case, it is a case of working out chicken or egg. What came first, the explosion or the fire? And that forms part of that investigation, because often you'll have a mechanical failure that results in a gas explosion that then damages equipment to cause a fire.
Oh, that must be fun to pick apart, because at that point, everything's kind of
spread out and everywhere.
Yeah, it's fun. But that can also give you information about how the explosion was caused and the extent of the explosion, which can give you information about how much pressure or what kind of material was involved based on distances of debris, for example, or how blown out all the windows are, or if it knocks, or if it blew out the side of a house, this sort of thing. In reality, it's the case that you don't need all that much pressure to cause this that level of damage, for example, blowing out the front of a house. You just end up with a lot of pressure points all pushing on a wall at once, which will often overwhelm the structure and push it over.
Ah, so it's not so much an explosion, it's more of a just general...
It's a mixture.
Slightly too much pressure.
Well, all explosions are too much pressure. That's just the nature of them. Yeah.
Slightly.
Experiences may vary. definitions of explosions we've somewhat covered. In a fiery sense, the classic in fire investigation, Kirk's, describes explosions as a rapid oxidization with the evolution of considerable heat accompanied by a disruptive effect. Well,
a disruptive effect? What an understatement.
Does it have to be disruptive? What if it explodes? What if an explosion happens and no one was disturbed? Is it still an explosion?
There's a tree falling in the woods all over again.
That is a good philosophical question. I'll write a letter to Kirk and ask. Well, yes, exactly. Well, that is something to bear in mind with explosions. We always talk about them in a destructive effect. But of course, explosions are, in a controlled sense, very useful. You know, all combustion engines work through tiny little explosions in the pistons or buffer pistons to push them up and down and give us auto motion, for better or for worse, I suppose.
That is some technical stuff that I think will be lost on people soon now we're moving more to electric vehicles. I find that a bit sad in a way.
Yeah, that's true.
You're trying to get your head around how an internal combustion engine works, I find quite complicated with the four different stages. And I was going to say it blows my mind a little bit, but I feel like I'm making a really bad pun.
You've got to do it. You have to make the bad pun. It has just occurred to me that it is called a combustion engine, then leads on to the explosion idea, doesn't it? Like mini explosions to make your car go forward.
That's why you have a spark plug as well.
Yeah.
That starts the fire, doesn't it?
Diesel cars don't have spark plugs. That's different, isn't it? I think we're getting really distracted, though. I don't think we need to go down the internal combustion engine route anymore, do we?
I think we did an episode on internal combustion engine as well.
I think, do they? I'm pretty sure, yeah, diesel still has spark plugs. Because that's the way, all cars, all internal combustion engines, diesel or petrol, work for the same principle of you fine mist of liquid vapor of petrol or diesel into the combustion chamber. And then spark plug likes it, and it lights it, and that little explosion pushes the piston up. And then it drops down again, and then the same thing happens again and again.
That seems like it shouldn't be safe. I know that it is, and I know that millions of cars drive across the world every day, but it seems dangerous.
Well, it depends on your flavour for safe. If you just let it, if you just run an engine forever and ever like that, eventually it overheats, so it needs to be cooled and ventilated. And also it breaks down over time. Every little explosion causes a little bit of damage and everything wears down, even in a controlled sense. All moving parts fail eventually. Entropy!
Another episode.
Yeah.
We did ages ago on thermodynamics.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like started off saying plutonium and trying to have a bit of a rant about it. I feel like I should kind of mention that in a bit more detail. So I've worked with quite a lot of nuclear scientists over the years. I don't know anyone that's tried to build a nuclear weapon because I don't work with those people. But the people that I work with that have mentioned things to do with plutonium is basically like you need something called a critical mass. You need enough plutonium to make it do something. So similar to what you were saying about setting up a fire, say, there are various conditions you need to meet to make your plutonium do anything even vaguely interesting. So just carrying it around, it's probably going to be fine unless you've packed it into a certain type of mass and have certain types of plutonium isotopes, and you've surrounded it with the right amount of moderator to reflect enough neutrons to have a sudden massive release of energy from the plutonium as it absorbs neutrons, it's just not really going to do much. So in a film telling someone to be careful, unless you're trained on what is safe and not safe, is next to meaningless. So exactly what you were saying about what you consider safe, Nick.
What does plutonium look like normally? Could you you can just hold it with gloves on? I know nothing about plutonium, so I'm really intrigued.
I've never actually met any in real life. I think it's just like a grey metal. There are different types of plutonium, though.
I think it's like in an ore form, it's like a yellowy stone. I know we call it yellow cake for
that. That's uranium.
Uranium? Ah, mixing it up.
But it's not by itself explosive. It doesn't have to be kept under like lock and key in its normal state.
No, it gives off neutrons. Some isotopes give off alpha particles. Some are more active than others. So it's kept behind lock and key because people could potentially do bad things with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you need to be trained on how to handle it.
Could you start a fire with it? So you might not have an explosion, but you could have a plutonium fire.
Some forms do like to absorb water from the atmosphere quite quickly, which results in quite a significant output of heat, which could potentially start a fire, I believe. It's pyrophoric, I think is the term.
Oh.
But I don't know any more specific than that. You can look it up, though, if you want. I think that information is freely available online.
That's a new word that I learned. Pyrophoric.
That's taken me right back to A-level chemistry, that one.
I'm going to say I think I've heard the word before, but I'd struggle to define it. I'll try to remember your definition.
I think a plutonium fire would be a very specialist situation.
Yes, well, on our risk assessments, we do have a radioactive option to tick. So, never say never. Go get my iron, my lead PPE on, and off we go.
Iron? He's just sticking on iron, armor.
This will help with the radiation, I'm sure.
It won't hurt. Yeah, it's highly unlikely. Though, there are so many layers of safety in place that getting to that point is just... it's probably never going to happen in any realistic scenario.
Here's a layer of safety I don't understand, right? I was always told that you weren't allowed to use your phone at a petrol station because your phone could cause sparks that could ignite the petrol and cause an explosion. But is that just over-egging health and safety, or is that a legitimate concern?
Yeah, so I did look into that a bit. So I've not found an actual source for the concern around using your mobile phone while at the petrol station, other than being distracted. There is no source for mobile phones causing electrical faults or any electrical sparks, so I don't see why they would need to avoid using a mobile phone at the pump, other than, of course, pay attention to what you're doing and don't spill flammable liquid all over the place, ideally.
I suppose flammable also is different to explosive.
Well, then you... oh, okay, so then you run into a bit of a thing. So...
I've opened a can of flammable worms.
What you'll find is what all flammable liquids, essentially, if you stick a match in a... very, very specifically, if you stick a match into a puddle of petrol, the match will go out. But if you look... wave a lit match over the top of the surface of a puddle of petrol, the vapors coming off the petrol will ignite. It's always the vapors that ignite, not the liquid itself. Because you need, as I said before, you need your fire triangle. If you don't have that oxygen, you've got no fire.
Oh, that's a good point.
So you can almost make too much flammable. If you just had only flammable liquid, it would nothing. So but it's just trying to keep oxygen away. Is quite difficult on an oxygenated planet.
It is. So there's an industrial example I can bring up. I've just had a flashback from a conversation I had with a colleague during COVID. So, not quite during COVID, during that period just when we were coming off COVID and people were starting, and fuel prices skyrocketed, I think, during the start of the Ukraine war. And basically, everyone was filling up on petrol, buying petrol where it was cheap. And a lot of there was just one person who decided to fill up a load of sort of open containers because they couldn't be bothered to buy a jerry can. And so we had four or five large gallon buckets at the back of their car filled with petrol. And of course, the vapors coming off these petrol filled the car. And I don't believe we worked out what the ignition source was, but the car exploded. Not because of the petrol, massive fire due to the petrol. What, as I understand, happened was what we call a deflagration, where you have a low speed explosion, slower than the speed of sound, which blew out the windows. The driver was apparently fine, but if you gather enough petrol vapor in one place, it will combust and you will have a small explosion, similar to what you get with methane. Vapor and gas are very similar. If that makes sense.
So I feel like all these really dramatic explosions we see in movies, just they're not a thing. It's not surprising, really. Movies make things seem more dramatic than they are.
Yeah, well, good pyrotechnics do present really beautiful explosions with very, very directed with light and force, as it were.
It's just not the same if there's some action movie star running away from a building, going, you know, I've saved everyone, the building's about to explode, and then it doesn't explode because the safety on the hob has
turned it all off.
It's just not the same vibe. Like, Steven Spielberg is not going safety, is he?
No,
but dramatic.
No, exactly. But, you know, it makes our world a safer place, and explosions do still happen. People do still get hurt in them, sadly. The industrial example I was thinking of, thankfully, again, no one was seriously hurt, but it was a scenario where we have a chemical processing plant that coats fabrics with solvents to make them more water resistant. And essentially we have a situation where we need to avoid a explosive environment as the fabric runs through a roller and that's coated in solvent. And so they put this the area this happens into a high explosive protection area. So we've got a glass cabinet around it and there's ventilation making sure that the solvent, the dissolving solvent inside, the vapors coming off it, never reach above the LEL, the lower explosive limit of the air vapor mixture to cause an explosion. And then, of course, one day someone leaves the door open, the LEL limit is moved beyond, and then some spark, most likely from static, sets off, ignites the gas and causes an explosion, knocking some poor sod over as he walked past the machine. Sometimes it's a lot more. It's easier to prevent an explosive environment from being created than prevent sparks or other ignition sources from coming into the situation.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about vapors and flammable liquids, but they're not the only explosive environments you can create.
You can also overpressurize, as we discussed, you can also overpressurize vessels to result in an explosion. But you can also have some examples. I don't know if we want to move into the animal examples or...
No, I was thinking dust and, you know, fine powders.
Although, I do often wonder, think about these aspects. And they follow a very similar pattern. Like you have a fine particulate, whether or not it be vapor or powder. I don't know if you know very famously, windmills explode on a disturbingly regular basis. Because of a fine dust powder, fine flour that fills the air, you can end up with a dust explosion that results again in a deflagration, suddenly heating the air and causing a pressure to push out and blow the windmill apart.
Is that just caused by like friction between the dust grains, or something else?
So I've heard. My understanding, investigation into dust explosions are relatively common. Whether or not the grains rubbing together in the air, I don't think that would cause too much of an issue. It might cause heating, But no, that's the thing. It's fine dust floating around in the air, so we'd be well ventilated.
Well, I think it's kind of it makes that explosive environment. It's got fuel because, you know, flour dust is fuel for a fire.
True.
You've got a good air fuel mix, and then you just need heat of some sort, which could be I don't know if it's the frictional, you know, static from dust. But everything else you've got...
Is it the stone?
The nice... You've got two parts of the fire triangle.
Yeah, you just need a nice spark. A bit of friction, maybe a door opening, someone touching something with a hand and being earthed by it and a little spark. And
is part of the reason because the dust creates this big surface area, so you've got a lot of the fuel in contact with the oxygen? Is that why it's more likely?
Yes, exactly. And you just need one little example of oxidization to cause enough heat to oxidize another particle of dust, to oxidize another particle of dust, and then you have a chain reaction that results in the sudden expansion of pressure due to over air heating up.
I get it. So I'm sure I remember being taught this in school and just not understanding it at all. 20 years later, now I do.
Well, but the scary thing is, you can do this with anything that oxidizes. So you can have iron fires in the same way, or titanium fires in the same way. One of my colleagues investigated not so long ago, which result in extremely hot, fiery explosions. Maybe not so much gaseous, but definitely far hotter.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, don't go to windmills, death trap.
Is that really likely, though? How many windmills do we have making flour these days?
I think there's only one or two left in England. I went to one recently, that's why it made me think of that. Maybe I wouldn't have gone in if I'd... It was extremely dusty.
I should point out, these aren't the wind turbines that you see in fields and the offshore ones that create electricity. That's something else entirely.
Oh, yeah, these are like flour-based, wind-powered old buildings from way back when.
Yeah.
Yes, but I think as Antonio was alluding to before, that isn't just the old style windmills. You can get that in any place you process any dusty material. So any modern windmill with flour, they have a lot of safety precautions to prevent explosions through igniting the flour in the air, essentially.
In theory, could I ignite flour in the air in my...
Oh yeah, feel free. Well, don't.
We do not.
I'm not going
we
to.
We do not maybe advocate do it outside. This. But
we're not. But I'm just intrigued that if I threw a kilo of flour around in my kitchen and then lit a match, would it go up in flames?
I remember it was a while ago. You can do an experiment. So you can get a... You might want to edit this bit out. So you can get those little sucker things, like a bigger one you use for getting stuff out of children's ears, and you can suck up some flour with it, and you can puff that into the air, and you can ignite it. And you'll end up with a little... Essentially,
yeah, yes. You can do it.
Like we said, we're not advocating anyone do this inside their home.
Yes, exactly.
Quite interesting that you could, in theory.
Yes, exactly.
Mm. Yeah, dangerous dinner party trick is you have candles on your table, you got some pepper, and if you have finely milled pepper, you can probably throw it across and boom, little fireball.
Yeah, don't see why not.
Except for safety, that's why. That's why not.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. Keep it safe. Do it outside, or don't.
We do not want to be sending Nick to investigate what caused this fire.
He'll know. He'll have listened to the podcast. And he'll know.
1 sec. It's about a bag of flour and a weird sucker thing. Technical term.
That sounds like a good lead-in for exploding animals.
Yeah.
Are there any sucker-related animals that explode?
No suckers. I'm really intrigued what you guys are going to think about these. So we're going to... Let's start... They're all insects. So let's start with termites. We're going to move to ants. And then I've got a special bonus one for you at the end.
Oh.
I'm nice like that.
Is this going to be like a quiz, Ellie?
We could do a quiz, but... Maybe not today. So this is a species of termite in the rainforests of French Guiana. and they grow sacks of toxic blue liquid on their backs, like little termite backpacks. And then they explode these onto their enemies in suicidal self-defense. I mean, is that just not the coolest thing you've ever heard?
How do they make them explode?
Like a bucket of paint.
How do they make it explode? I'm very glad you asked that question, Laura. So they filled their backpacks with blue crystals, which are secreted by glands on their abdomens. And then I think this is the one where they tear into their bodies. Oh no, this is the squeezy one. They squeeze their abdominal muscles so hard until they explode. And they have a portion of their abdominal wall which is thinner and weaker that is like primed to do this. And then, yeah, it like explodes the contents on their enemies and they die, obviously, because they've ruptured their own abdomen.
Is this exploding or bursting?
Oh, this is the kind of content I wanted.
But that's a fair point. My description of a overpressurized vessel, that's essentially bursting.
That's
too.
What I was wondering is, there's the creek.
Is a water balloon an explosion or is it just bursting? Excellent point,
Mummy. Well, then again, the water does not expand out in every direction. I suppose it goes in a specific direction.
Well, it does.
Didn't you say there had to be an increase in heat as well, Nick, to count as an explosion?
So for a fire explosion, certainly, but an overpressurized explosion, and again, because of pressure, you know, the increase in pressure does tend to be a result of overheating.
But we call those mechanical. You can straight up have a mechanical explosion. Like, if you just filled a balloon with and popped it, that is that not an explosion as well? A mechanical one. I say pop that, I mean, you know, cause the balloon to rupture, like these termites.
Yes, thank you.
I'm
glad you're on the termite
side. Would you say it still included the disruptive effect?
Oh, it's definitely disruptive if you're an invasive predator against these termites. I think this might sway you.
Okay, go on.
So they've got a chemical reaction going on as well.
Oh,
my.
So they've got two specialized glands.
Mm-hmm.
And they produce these blue crystals. But then when the termites explode, there's extra pouches that burst with the salivary glands, and the crystals have to react with the secretions of the salivary glands to become toxic. So there is an extra bit of something going on.
Yeah. Although it does sound like we're spraying them with toxic crystals. Which, granted, I wish I could spray my enemies with toxic crystals. I wish I had glands that made toxic crystals. But,
I know. Snazzy.
And it is quite disruptive.
It'd be pretty disruptive, especially for the lives of the termites that are exploding. They're dead, so it doesn't get more disruptive than that.
Yeah. I can't help but feel, though, just based on my experience, a good definition of an explosion is a sudden and, I've got to say, disruptive expansion of gas, essentially. That applies pressure somewhat equally around in all directions, if that makes sense. It's similar to an implosion where you have everything that sucks in. An explosion is the opposite, where the gas in that area is all pushed out in all different directions, or into the direction of least resistance, the case tends to be.
Yeah, I was just about to say you get shaped explosives for helping with demolition projects, which suggests that the force is directed in a particular place, not just expanding in all directions. But I guess that comes down to what you were saying, so you might surround it with something on one side that directs the explosion somewhere else.
Yes, well, demolition explosions tend to use what we call high explosives to do high level of very powerful but small explosion in very specific directions. I wasn't sure, Ellie, early on, did you ask if you dropped a box of C4, will it explode?
Yes, I did ask that.
Yeah, so if you drop a box of C4, it won't explode.
Okay. I'm very clumsy, so that's good to know that I didn't think I'll ever be carrying C4.
Yeah, you need specific trigger to, as I understand, to be clear, I'm not a demolition expert, but you need a spark or specific igniter to cause C4 and specific modern explosives to explode. older explosives such as those made using nitroglycerin, that tends to be fairly unstable, and can explode if sufficiently rustled about, essentially, due to sudden oxidization from small amounts of heat caused by the disruption, as I understand.
But no one would use that anymore because it's a bit too uncontrollable.
Yes. Although never say never.
Well, yeah. It depends what you're trying to achieve and who you are, I suppose. Comes back to my point about plutonium in films. It's usually criminals trying to steal it.
Yes, exactly.
I feel like we've distracted you, Ellie, from animals.
I know. Yeah, I'm trying to get back to to a conclusion.
There's another species of ant. So this, instead of we're moving from termites to ants, and it's literally called Colobopsis explodens. Because it's explosive. And it is similar to the termite in that it flexes so hard that its abdomen bursts at the seams and they tear themselves apart to protect the rest of the colony. They literally explode themselves, I think, in self-defense. And also, you said about gas. Well, these ones apparently smell strangely of curry when they explode. So there must be some sort of gas release going on there as well.
Oh, there we go. If it's curry involved. Yeah, actually, never mind. Well, possibly. So is there any sort of... This sounds similar to a bursting, but for chemical reaction, there, does that usually result in burning or a sudden expansion to knock the prey away?
It's to cover them in a toxic fluid.
Gotcha.
Nope. So they explode and release this bright yellow, sticky, toxic substance.
Gotcha.
Here's my question. What's the, radius, the blast zone?
From a tiny ant.
Is it far enough that it could be an explosion, not just they leaked a little bit of toxic liquid?
I really don't know, but also remember that it's an ant. So, realistically, it's not that.
But comparatively, scaled down. 10 ants.
Well, if it didn't work, they wouldn't have evolved over millions of years of evolution to do this, right? So it must be a large enough radius that they can protect the colony from whatever's coming towards them.
Yeah, and if two species are doing it, are they evolutionarily linked in any way, the ants and the termites? I don't know why you'd know that, but it seems logical to me. They must have had a common ancestor.
They must have had a common ancestor. They're too similar, aren't they? They're too... They've got too much in common. Unless it's remarkable conversion.
Yeah, it does happen sometimes, doesn't it? Because if it works for one species in one environment, you can imagine another one might evolve it in a completely different environment and they'd be totally unrelated.
There are many examples of convergent evolution where species that aren't actually related by a common ancestor have evolved these same traits, like the exploding ants and termites, even though I reckon they probably do have a common ancestor somewhere way back in the evolutionary history. But it also, because you were arguing it, that it's not actually an explosion, it's a bursting at the seams. But what about something like the Hulk? Because when he is Bruce Banner, that's the character, right? And then he becomes the Hulk. He bursts out of his own body and he rips all of his clothes. Is that an explosion or is that just something else?
You could make the argument that it's an explosive expansion of Banner. Similar to an explosive expansion of gases in caused by combustion. I'd say bursts and explosions are similar. Explosions in a fire investigation sense always involve some combustion, so oxidization of gases. I must admit, maybe saying that bursting doesn't count as exploding isn't exactly fair because,
I'm taking it as a win for the ants and the termite.
I'd say it's definitely a mechanical explosion, then we'll call it. A biological mechanical explosion.
There is.
If I make sense.
Yeah, there's chemicals involved in this one.
Yeah. But I'd still encourage just one more thing in animals causing what I'd argue is more of an explosion. Pistol crab. A crab with a giant claw that is able to close the claw so quickly and with such pressure, it causes a burst of water at high pressure to shoot out of it, and so it's hunts its prey.
I think it's.
Have you heard of that one before?
I think it's a species of shrimp. Yeah, and it's like, is it sonification, where it causes light, the reaction causes light as well? I don't know if that's the correct term.
There we go. So we've got got light and high pressure. Perfect. And it's a really hot clock.
From just one mechanical movement, or is the light produced by a chemical?
Yeah, it's so incredibly fast, and the force is like wildly, wildly high. This tiny little animal. There's videos of it doing it. It's really cool. And there's a flash. I have one last example for us. This is, I think, a bit of a schoolyard joke, perhaps. And I normally wouldn't say that, but it's quite funny. So the situation is that when a male honeybee mates with a female honeybee, his testicles explode and he dies.
Hilarious.
Why would it do that?
Yeah.
Evolutionary. Yeah. Why would it do that? How does that help?
Evolution. There's always an advantage. So basically his endophallus, which is basically a BPS, is then lodged in the female, preventing another male from coming along and mating with the queen bee, ensuring that his genes are passed on. Think how many offspring a queen bee would have.
Explosive reproduction.
It's incredible. Apparently, it's also audible to the human ear if you were nearby.
I think that'd be a good example of an explosion, you know, similar to what we discussed previously, you know, a biomechanical one.
Well, it's also, I don't know if it's like a ripping more than an explosion, because his endophallus is ripped from his body. But I think there is some buildup.
There must be considerable force, otherwise how's it stop?
Yeah.
Or is it like a corkscrew, like some animals have corkscrews to kind of make it more difficult to get away from the male?
Ducks.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of techniques like that sort of thing to prevent other males from mating with the female in the animal kingdom, which is interesting. But Snopes did a review on it, because it's one of those things that gets like banded around. And they reached out to a number of experts to confirm whether testicles flown. And they reckon it's correct, but they couldn't say 100% one way or the other. So they said it's a research in progress at the end of their article.
I was just wondering, how would you observe that? How many bees do you have to watch
to be 100% sure? But they also die. This is the trade-off with exploding animals. The termites die, the ants die. Unfortunately, the males' bees die when part of their body explodes.
So is a lot of this just inferred from the aftermath, similar to Jack's job as a forensic
engineer? We've linked it full circle.
Precisely.
Amazing.
No bee deaths yet, but I'll let you know as soon as I come across one.
If that caused a fire that you had to go investigate, how many bees would that have to be?
I'll get back to you on that one. I don't think bees are small enough to cause a dust explosion, though, so we'll see.
A devastating effect.
Exactly. Thousands of casualties. Bee casualties. Oh, no.
They I don't know how that would happen. Explode whilst they're surrounded by pollen in the hive. That is a ridiculous scenario.
But bees can get quite warm though, can't they?
They can.
Like inside the hive, it can get really warm.
Inside a hive, but I think that's more body heat and hive engineering than it is explosion.
Yeah.
So we've not seen any exploded beehives.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Through
who
natural
knows?
Causes, I mean.
If they get dusty, perhaps.
I don't want bee arsonists.
So someone who desperately hates bees. I can't
leave the bees alone. We need the bees.
I can't think of a mechanism which would cause a hive to explode. And ultimately, that you do need mechanisms for these things to happen.
Good. Well, I'm glad that's.
There's
not
that scene in Hunger Games where she cuts the hornet nest off the branch. Is that an explosion or is that just a burst?
I think that's a bursting of bees. An explosion of anger from the bees.
So that seems like a good place to leave it. We've deviated quite off topic. We started off with Laura's rant about how plutonium is handled very delicately in films. when in fact, if you dropped it, it probably would not cause an explosion. It would cause other bad effects, but probably not an explosion. But we then also learned about what is an explosion and how do you hopefully not start one. And the animal kingdom is explosive, apparently. Thanks for listening and see you in the next one.
Avoid windmills.
The views expressed in this podcast belong entirely to the person that said them. They do not represent any industry or organisation. If you enjoyed listening to these views, it would really help us out if you could rate us, leave a review and tell a friend. This podcast was sponsored by no one, but if you're interested in funding us to continue to have frank discussions about science and engineering, please get in touch.